It's the one thing I'll tell you
Okay.
about Augusta National. I came the closest I've ever come to a one on the sixth hole.
Wow.
Man.
Like this
Where was the
close.
pin? Where was the pin?
The pin was back left.
Damn. That's
Wow.
big
I came
time.
this close.
Welcome back to The Loop. I'm Alex Myers. As always, I'm joined by Steve Hennessy and Christopher Powers. Obviously, a huge week, probably the biggest week of the year. Masters Week is here. And to celebrate that, we have a huge guest we're very excited about. NBC's and SiriusXM, PGA Tour Radio's, Mike Tirico, the legendary broadcaster who will be back doing play-by-play for SiriusXM this year at the Masters. Of course, you heard him over the weekend as well. Especially with the drive, chip, and putt, which was as entertaining as always as well. So great to chat with Mike. We'll get into that in a bit. But first, guys, especially Steve, we are celebrating Akshay Bhatia. I mean, talk about the sweat of all sweat, Steve. I know we were in it together. Our buddy Joel Beal was telling us to cash out. I thought you were going to cash out because you were going to be traveling Sunday, but then you didn't, I don't think. So this was crazy. That was what an amazing Sunday.
It looked like such a sweat-free, you know, Sunday for us at the start. He's got a six-shot lead on Denny going into the back nine. And yeah, I mean, Saturday I was barely able to watch. We had a wedding for my sister-in-law. Shout out Annie and Steve. They got married. And then yesterday was traveling down to Augusta. So really wasn't able to track it. I did hedge on Denny on Saturday at like plus 600 through
ooh,
a
nice
amount on it. So if Denny had got it done, I, you know, it would have been a good week still, but it was a great week on Akshay.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was my pick in the column. It was Pat Mayo's dark horse. It was our caddy's dark horse. So, I mean, we just cleaned up. That's two winners in a row after Andy Lack hit Stefan Jaeger the week before that. So
yeah, hot.
The vibes are strong.
Vibes are immaculate. I saw you guys had tabbed him. I had also live bet him last week because he was far and away like leading in approach. I think he was just incredible last week. And he was right in the mix till Sunday. He just couldn't make a putt.
Yeah.
So I something went in my head was like, ah, all right, I'll put a little on him. I didn't have as big a bet on him as you, unfortunately, only 10 bucks, but still 65-1 odds. I did not take the cash out. I think, what was it? It was like 250 after two rounds. It was 400 after three rounds. It got up to 500 at some point yesterday. And then, of course, I have to bet against a guy who, I mean, almost literally birdied every hole on the back nine. And that was just insane. And I know you were traveling. And I know you thought I was bitching and moaning, but I was like, he's birdying every hole.
Like, I was driving and like trying to pay attention. I made CP take the wheel so I could lock in. It was wild.
Don't tell Hertz.
Rental agreement.
If Hertz is listening.
Yeah.
It worked,
he finally missed a green and I'm flipping. And meanwhile, I just want to watch the Iowa women's basketball game in peace. You know, and I'm like, this is amazing. It's sweat free. I can just watch that. I'm like, I wasn't even flipping to it. And then he just starts birding every hole and he finally misses a green. I'm like, oh good. And I flip back. I flip back and they're like showing a replay of him like chipping in. I'm like, what is going on? I mean, this is insane. Oh, unbelievable. But anyway, Akshay becomes 2K Bhatia because I think in total we won about 2K. So good job by us. CP, I'm sorry, man. I mean, you again, look, I needed this so bad. I was so cold and I was like, I'm dead serious. I tweeted that I was going to walk away. I 100% would not have bet on the Masters. I probably would have come back at some point. Well, you know, except for the previous bets, but I really was like, this is it for me. This is a sign. Like I cannot win a golf bet. So I needed it. I mean, this probably gets me maybe back to even for the year. It's been such a crazy year, but CP, I mean, I know we've all been on Denny too. I felt really bad for him. It's an all-time comeback, an all-time putting performance. He still doesn't win. I mean, this has got to be brutal for the guy. At least though, he's in the Masters already via his world ranking.
Yeah, that was very nice consolation.
And I actually did bet actually before the playoff, as Steve knows.
All right, so there you go.
At minus money to get a little bit of action on it. But no, Steve and I were talking through it. I did feel like that had to be so crazy deflating for Denny to make the putt too, and think, man, I actually just pulled this off. And then actually finally got one to go after missing the 5-footer on, what was that, 17? That had to be so deflating. Like, man, I just put up the back nine of my life, and it's still not enough to get it done. And obviously, losing to Victor Hovland too at Memorial. So two kind of like possible phenoms here you kind of run into. That's tough. So in another universe, maybe Denny has two wins, but like you said, in the Masters. So now they both get to go. Good for both of them.
Yeah. And obviously the big story they kept going to was actually being in the inaugural drive, chip, and putt. I mean, wearing the crazy baggy pants 10 years ago. You know, we've had him on the pod. We've been talking about this guy for years. He's had his moments. He's still only 22. And suddenly he's a two-time PGA Tour winner. You know, he and Denny, by the way, are both in the field at 90-1, which anytime I think 90-1, I have the Louis Oosthuizen flashback, Steve, to 2012. You know, this guy is a stud. He won a long-term bet with me against our buddy Danny Rappaport, being in the top 50 by the year 2025. He jumped up to like number 34, I think, because of this. So just a huge day for us. Good job jumping on him live in the playoff. Although, what did you think when he was grabbing at his shoulder, out the phone number for the doctor? I mean, I truly never seen the like of it.
I couldn't believe that. That he didn't go for it. We were talking about that too. Ended up being a galaxy brain strategy play. But whoever, I think it was Dan Hicks, was like, you know, no need to go for it here. And I was like, do you want to play in the Masters? Like maybe now is the time to force the issue. If you're, I get it. He probably thought I'll play in a bunch of Masters, but look, it worked out, Denny. I don't know how it worked out. I don't know how Denny chunked a 100-yard wedge. Smiley called it a warm-up wedge, and then he dumped it in the water. That was literally something we do out there. So tough spot for Denny. But yeah, I was stunned that actually I didn't go for the green.
I mean, maybe it was the shoulder. I don't know.
Maybe the shoulder.
I'm agree with you 100%, because when even it got to within one, I'm thinking, you know, I'm like, in full puke mode, but I'm like, look, 17's a drivable par four, 18's a long par five. That's where Akshay should separate himself from Denny, you know? And so, right, when he hits a drive, Denny had no chance going for it. Akshay did. You're right. It seemed like a no-brainer, but I mean, again, maybe it was the shoulder or whatever. But yeah, that the whole thing, the chunk into the water, the back to the matching birdies on 18, the, you know, writing out a number, handing to a guy, like getting the doctor to come out. He literally called a timeout before like a 100-yard shot. I mean, just a wild scene. But
that was a little much.
Might have been a little much.
Like Mariano Rivera, you know, going into the dugout in the ninth inning of a, you know, playoff game to get a rub down. Like,
so he can hit a little 100-yard wedge shot.
Yeah, only golf would do something.
Only golf. I mean, again, yeah, the Golfers Are Athletes movement was – set back a few years. It was tough. But again, we won. We got the money. CP, glad you joined in on the action as well. We got a little extra scratch coming into this week. I should mention also, we will, of course, be getting into full Masters picks later in the show with Keith Stewart, our buddy. So stay tuned for that. But first, we teased it earlier, we have the legendary play-by-play man, Mike Tirico, and host, Mike Tirico, joining us. Please have a listen to our chat with Mike Tirico. All right. We are very excited to welcome legendary sports broadcaster Mike Tirico back to the podcast, I should say. Mike, I know you probably will, you know, you don't want to take that title, but we're calling you that.
Just call me old.
For joining us.
Just call me old. Let's not mess around here. You want to cut to the chase. That's fine. It's good to be with you guys. Thanks so much. Great time in golf.
Yeah, great time in golf. Yeah. So, you know, right off the bat, let's just say Mike is back as SiriusXM's lead play-by-play voice for all four tournament rounds. Mike, that's got to be exciting. I know you're already in Augusta. We're taping this early, and you're down there. I know you're there for drive, chip, and putt, and everything else. But what, you know, how special of a time is this? What sets the Masters apart from all the other great events that you get to cover?
Well, you slackers, I'm waiting here for you. You guys do this for a living, and I'm only a part-timer, and here I am, ahead of the curve. You know, the Masters was the weekend, right? You look forward to the weekend, and USA had cable coverage, and then I was lucky enough to be a part of when ESPN took over the cable coverage and hosted that for 8 or 9 years in Butler Cabin. And it felt like the coverage kept expanding a little bit more, right? And then the Masters Online, Masters.com, and what's really expanded now, all 4 days, plus the practice rounds and the par three contest. Right. Now you extend it back to the weekend before with the drive, chip, and putt on Sunday and the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And it's a week and a half of really cool golf with the best women amateurs in the world, the youngsters who are preteens and early teens with their chance, 80 kids to play at Augusta National. It all just builds and builds and builds to the 1 week that puts the other 51 weeks on the calendar in golf. This is the 1 week that fans, patrons if you want, announcers, players, caddies, agents, sponsors, you name it. Everybody thinks about this week, and when it arrives, it's really cool.
Is there a favorite moment of the week, Mike, whether it's before, you know, coverage starts of the tournament rounds and you get to walk the course a little, or the ANWA or the drive, chip, and putt? Do you have a favorite moment from these next 10?
You know, all of them have their different cool portions, right? To see the women amateurs play on Saturday under pressure. And I don't think we knew what to expect the first year it happened. And then Jennifer Kupcho and Maria Fosse had a heck of a battle all the way down. And Kupcho had a terrific second nine and won. And you're like, this event's going to be pretty cool. And you have champions crowned on the 18th green at Augusta. And then you have the youth that win the drive, chip, and putt. You have 8 kids who win a championship on the 18th green at Augusta. I love that moment. And then the buildup during the week is cool. But there's nothing like Thursday morning when that first tee shot's hit. That is really cool. And when it's the honorary starters on that first tee, to see Jack come down that little hill and come hit a tee shot again, and Tom Watson there, and Gary Player, and over the years, Arnold and others who we've seen, that just has a really cool, unique feel because it's not this big live event broadcast on TV. There are not thousands of people around that first tee. There's an intimacy. Usually a dew swept morning out there. It just kind of brings you back to why this tournament has gone on for now 88 playings and continued to raise the bar of special feel if you love golf.
You sort of answered this before talking about how everyone kind of looks forward to this. This is going to be my second. These guys have been to a few more than I have. I know you've been to a bunch. Does it ever get old? I'm guessing.
No. Not 1 second. Not for 1 second. For the women's amateur, we host the coverage and call it from Butler Cabin. And to walk in there as your office, even for a couple of days for the women's amateur, but in the past years when I was hosting at ESPN, it's just so cool. And then you just walk out, and there is a quiet and a largeness to Augusta National that's just different from any other golf course you've ever been at or on. Player, walking around, it does not get old. And it feels new every time, and it feels invigorating every time. And for those who have been there, they'll get this. You walk to the ninth green and go, man, that slope is really, really big. It's bigger than it looks on TV. I'll give you guys a funny trivia a little bit. One thing I've done in my career that never gets mentioned is for 2 years, we called the 3D broadcast of the Masters. It was Paul Azier, Curtis Strange, and me. And we called the Masters in 3D. It was mostly seen in Europe because there were 3D TVs and glasses in bars in Europe, which I still want to see. Like, you're having a few pints and you're watching the Masters in 3D. I need to meet somebody and find out what that experience was like. There were very few 3D TVs in America. They thought 3D might become a real realistic TV option. It obviously hasn't panned out, but we called a couple of years the Masters in 3D, and it was the first time you could see wow, these slopes, these hills, the elevation change is really cool. So for me, every time I come here and I go back out, it still just hits me as that's an incredible optical illusion if you're watching on TV compared to what it is in person.
What year was that? Or what years were that?
Oh, man. I got to say maybe 11 and 12. Okay. I have to do some digging back on that. Yeah.
Yeah, so that just never
seen
took
by,
off.
Seen by no one. I seen by a few people in the few people on the grounds because there were a couple of 3D TVs. And like I said, Sky was doing the TV in Europe, and they did stuff in 3D on a little bit more regular basis. So, yeah, it's just one of those odd things. So I think I've done everything possible other than the CBS broadcast at Augusta. Did the Thursday, Friday, hosted the Women's AM, the Drive Chip and Put, and radio, of course, and the 3D broadcast.
That's wild. What, looking back, I mean, obviously that stands out to you, but what would you say is your most special Masters moment that you've gotten to call?
Well, I totally fell into it. My first year calling golf for ABC was 97. And when I started doing that, part of the deal was go to the majors with SportsCenter. Uh-huh. And I was here in 97. That was my first Masters. Oh. So there you go. Say no more. Yeah. And then the first Masters I got to call on radio was in 2019. And say no more, right? So I've kind of fallen into it. And the cool thing about 2019 and the cool thing about radio is the radio booth, we don't do the entirety of the broadcast at 18. We do it mostly in the media center. But when the last four groups or so are coming towards 18, whoever the analyst is, and I get out to our position. Our position is under the camera tower that you see to the players left at 18. Mm-hmm. And it looks like you're in a hockey penalty box. There's kind of glass up around you. And it's lifted off the ground a few feet. So you can see over the fans who are there watching the players. But I literally was 40, maybe 35, 40 yards from Tiger, watching him in person sink that putt. And we were out there for a good part of that afternoon. We were out there a little bit earlier than we should have been. But every time the numbers changed on the iconic leaderboard, the place went nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, a group finishes, they clap, they go up the hill, they sign the scorecard. Then you look up at the big board, the numbers change, and the crowd around 18 kept growing. And just erupted, just sensing that they might see history. And then we were all witnesses to that on the 18th green. And you look at that, and I think that's a picture. Which picture is behind you? Is that Torrey?
No, it's Torrey, yeah.
Torrey, okay. But you see Tiger at 18 at Augusta in 2019. You look around, there are only 3,000-4,000 of us, maybe. Who knows how many people, but very, very few. And as somebody who was hooked on golf by Nicklaus in 86 – and being young and watching that at home, to be there for this generation's Jack in 86 moment was something that I can just talk about forever and never forget.
Yeah. How do you contextualize and compare that to some of the other biggest sporting events that you've called? Because you've pretty much done them all. So how does that Masters kind of compare to anything else that you've seen?
It was odd and unique because it was radio. It was the first time I've done it. It was it's funny because CBS is doing a special on 5 years of that, right? And they released on social media some of the beginning of it and a couple of minutes of it. You can hear Jim Nantz on talkback pretty much. And I don't remember his exact words, but we've all done this. Like, I'm not going to say anything. Mm-hmm. And you do that in the booth if you're going to lay out so the director and the producer know, I'm right there with you guys. There's nothing we're going to say. It's going to make this moment better, right? And it allows the director to cut all the cameras and all this, all the things that really bring a moment to life. You hear Jim say that, and then you hear Lance Barrow, the producer, repeat, nobody say a word, right? On radio, you can't really do that, right? Because especially that scene as Tiger hugs Joe LaCava, gestures to the crowd, and then walks up the hill and his son's waiting for him. Nobody on radio would ever know that. So now I'm completely doing play-by-play like it's a hockey game on the radio or a basketball game of now Tiger's walking up the hill and they're waiting for him in a red shirt. It's his son. Oh, and we didn't know he was right there because we couldn't see that angle, right? So it's one of those moments that I wish I could have enjoyed it, but I was just trying to capture it for the woman or man who was in a car driving because those are really the people at that point who were listening to you call it on the radio. So it was a neat experience. It was fun. Look, that's right up there. I think you always kind of remember the things that happened early on. And I don't think from a moment or an event or the circumstances, anything in a golf booth for me can ever top John Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just like, you can't.
Yep.
I've watched it over maybe 5 or 6 times, and I still can't believe how the whole thing played out start to finish. And I was really a passenger in that broadcast, to be honest. The late, great Bob Rosberg, Rossi, who was the on-course reporter, and Curtis Strange really did all the heavy lifting on that. Mm-hmm. And they should have, and they were incredible in that moment. But in moments in golf, there are a lot of great ones. Tiger, obviously, being there, being around so many Tiger wins over the years. But that Vanderbilt moment, that just takes the cake. I'll tell you a quick story. There was one of those anthology shows. They were doing the 20 greatest finishes in sports, and they showed a bunch. And like, when we come back, number one. And I'm like, wonder what number one is, right? And it was the Vanderbilt. I'm like, wow. Yeah, I guess so. I guess that was as crazy as you'll ever get. And the best part of that is almost no one, who, unless you're a real hardcore golf fan, and that's a lot of people watching this, remember who won that
Open.
You know? People are like, Paul Laurie? What happened to him after that? And people don't even remember that Justin Leonard was in the playoff.
Yeah. Three-man playoff. Yeah.
Right? So that's a moment, you know, that just is so many Easter eggs as you go back and relive it that I'll never forget being a part of that. Very lucky for sure.
You're talking about the transition to radio. As a sports radio nerd, I'm always kind of curious about like that. You're a TV guy, and now you have to transition. Like a guy like Kenny Albert is going from radio to TV like every other day. It's such a hard transition to go from like TV, let it breathe a little bit, to radio. Basically, you shouldn't ever shut up because you got to paint that kind of picture for the listeners.
Right. You know, I really kind of laughed at first when we were going to cover, it was then known as the British Open and the Open Championship, now the Open. First time I was going over there, 97, 98, 90, it was the year, it's 97. And you start hearing that the BBC broadcasts the Open on radio. I go, how does that work? And there was no SiriusXM PGA Tour radio. So you didn't have that out there. And I heard it, go, this is pretty cool. And then as we go through a decade plus later, PGA Tour radio really picks up. And, you know, if you're a golf fan like you all are, like the people watching this, and you have SiriusXM, I'm in the car during the week.
Yeah.
I listen. Yeah, and it's actually, it's really entertaining.
Yeah.
They have taken it to an art form of bouncing around to the different announcers, the guys walking out there, describing putts, all that stuff. So I may listen, you know, for the 40 some odd weeks that are going, I don't listen to the Barracuda Championship when it's on radio, right? But the 35, 40 weeks of the year, I'm listening. And then for 1 week, I've got to come in and play their game. And I have such admiration for the people who do it on a week-to-week basis. And I think they have set a template that you just try to, you know, in, as best you can follow. And it's nice to do it at Augusta, because if you are in a car and you're driving somewhere and you can't listen, you at least know in your mind's eye where somebody is. So you can say that, you know, here they are standing at 12, looking at that green, just hanging there and looking at all the danger that runs right across that green. I say that, you can see it, right? You can see the ball above a player's feet before a second shot on one of the par fives at the second nine, on the second nine, because you've seen it 1,000 times. So this one's even easier to do. It's fun to hop in for a week. My roots are in radio. I love radio, and the fact that I get a chance to come back and kind of brush off that skill for a week every year is really cool. And I'm very appreciative of the SiriusXM guys for asking me to come back for the Masters every year.
We mentioned that clip for the special, and you hear Nance and you see the director, Lance Barrow, and everything. Mm-hmm. You're obviously in that all the time. Do you, when you see something like that, or when you watch other sporting events, how often do you find yourself actually just watching the event, or how often do you find yourself kind of thinking about all that's going into it and listening to the guys and, you know, sure, taking stuff from those guys like Jim? And I know Bob Costas was your mentor or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
When you
looked up to, yeah, of course, looked up to all those guys. And I still have great admiration and learn things every day from people who are much younger than me. Someone like Joe Davis, what he calls a baseball game, right? I think actually, just a little inside baseball, I think our medium has changed a little bit. It's gone from right captions and layout to a real exciting call. It's almost better sometimes now on TV, and the art of make a big call, then lay out for the crowd, those kind of things. So you see how it works for everyone. I have a hard time, back to your question, divorcing myself from the professional viewer, trying to hone his craft for the perfect game. I think we're all in search of the perfect game at some point. I find myself struggling to divorce myself from that, whether it's the shots that are taken, the decisions that the producer makes, the elements that are there, what the announcers do, working with the analysts, working with the sideline reporter. When do you button up a sideline reporter's comment with some other germane fact, right? Because the sideline reporter had limited time. Sometimes you just let that go and you just let the report sit and say, thanks, Melissa, or thanks, Tracy for CBS, and so on. So it's not a science, it's an art, which is kind of silly because it's not really an art, but you know what I mean, right? There's no one way to do it.
Right.
And I think I learn every time. Now, the one time I can get myself emotionally invested in the event and not the broadcast is when my alma mater, Syracuse, plays.
Okay.
If it's a Syracuse football or basketball game, I'm less watching the mechanics of the broadcast and more yelling at the ACC officials, right? So there is an emotional place in that, but I love what we do. And I will say, I think that we all have, I shouldn't speak for everyone, I have an incredible respect and appreciation for the people who do this job. A bunch of my friends, Ian Eagles calling the Final Four on CBS this year, Andrew Catalan, who jumps in when Jim doesn't do the golf events. Andrew's another Syracuse alum. He's part of our little mafia. We've got a group chat of about 20 of us that stay in touch all the time.
Nice.
And like Andrew crushed the regional final that was played in Detroit, that Purdue beat Tennessee to get to the Final Four. Andrew did an awesome job on it. Andrew did a great job when Ricky Fowler won the Rocket Mortgage this past summer in Detroit. Wow. And like, I root for the guys in the business, Mike Breen when he does the NBA. You mentioned Kenny Albert when he does the hockey. Like, our whole group, we're all in a similar generation. And then the younger ones we've kind of included in the conversation. I find that a lot of us text each other, get along really well, and enjoy watching the other people in this business succeed. It's a fun time to be in it. The art of television sports has never been done better, ever, all the way across the board. Doesn't mean everybody's perfect. Doesn't mean everyone's your cup of tea. But this is the golden era of sports television in terms of TV production, producers, directors, associate producers, graphics, information for the audience, commentators. And I just love to watch and learn every day from the people who do this job as well.
Who would you say, if there's the best golfer out of all the sports play-by-play guys, who would win?
Well, hell, Nance went on a scholarship. So
that's not really fair.
He's got to take that title.
Nance did it.
I know Hicksie can play. I know Dan
plays a wing for it.
Danny's got his moments. Dan hits a good ball, and I've seen that. So I'll take it in the non-Nance division, because we've put Jim in a different category there. Of the play-by-play guys. And Terry Gannon's pretty good too. I've seen Terry get out there and hit it as well. So I shouldn't say that I've got a full roster, a full rundown on everybody. Right. We've joked at some point that we should all get together and get out and play.
Yes.
You know, if we have the AI golf announcer go for an event or so, we should all do like a guy's golf trip to Bandon or something like that with all the announcers, you know, and then call each other shots all the way around the golf course. It would just be the most insufferable round of golf imaginable.
Speaking of golf and media, or media golfers, Steve and I actually played Augusta National last year. We won the media lottery, to brag. My question is, does Mike Tirico enter the media lottery for Masters?
I was wondering this too.
I don't know. I'll tell you why. Because many, many years ago, I did, and I was selected. So there's no reason to take that spot from somebody else again, right? And as you guys can attest to, you just feel yourself very fortunate to be able to answer the question. Have you played Augusta National? You can say you did. And it was just, it's just really neat. And you just hope that you have a couple of good moments. And you can't help but walk around the place and the memories of this tee shot, that hole in one at 16, this whole location. Where was the Tiger hole location? Oh, it's there at 16. No, you just can't help but do all of those things. It's funny because people always ask if they're going, if they're lucky enough to go, and say, oh, you've been a bunch. Where would you say I go? And you say, of course, Amen Corner. Go see the elevation change at 9. I always send people to the landing area for tee shots at the second hole. Mm-hmm. So the players right at 2, because within a little triangle of about 40, 50 yards, you can see the second shots at 2 go down one way.
Right.
To walk over and watch the second shots at 3, one of my favorite holes on the golf course, come in. And you can take a walk 30 or 40 yards and watch the impossible task of guys trying to hit it close at 4.
Right.
I just think that's a really cool scene, less than most of the holes on the golf course area. And I just think you see really cool shots going for a par 5 and 2, the 80, 90-yard wedge shots with spin on that green at 3, and then the long par 3 fourth hole. Just a cool spot on the golf course, and I love when people go there. And I haven't had anybody come back and tell me that was the worst advice they were ever given. So that's my little favorite spot. And that's a spot, if I am usually on the days of the event, I work Golf Channel studio and then go right up to do radio. So I don't get a chance to get out to the golf course. But if I do get out Tuesday, Wednesday during the practice rounds, that's a spot I'll go hang for a little bit and just watch some golf and chill and have a good time.
So I'm the only one of us four who haven't played there. But so I feel terrible.
It's a tough room to be in, Mike.
It is a very tough room. Mike, what were your highlights from that day? You said you hoped to get a couple. Did you get a couple highlights that day when you got to play?
I was able to play another time. And here's the one thing I'll tell you about Augusta National. I have not had a hole-in-one. At some point, the tweet will go out, or the email or the group chat, whatever, it'll go out that – the long national nightmare is over for everybody who's played golf with me. I finally got one. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. But I came the closest I've ever come to a one on the sixth hole.
Wow.
Like,
where was the pin? Where was the pin?
The pin was back left.
Wow.
That's big time.
This close. Yeah. I love every time the director sets the hole and they say we go to 6, I'm like,
yeah.
Six. Almost my favorite hole of all time. So look, we're all blessed to be a part of the game. Look, the game's screwed up right now in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
We're all lucky to have experienced golf at the highest level and be close to some of the best players in the world. And where it really strikes me is getting ready for the women's amateur, the drive, chip, and putt, and you're reading the bios of all the competitors, and they all talk about greatest moment in golf. When I got to meet Jordan Spieth, when Nelly Korda shook my hand, like these players who we kind of take for granted when we cover them, they inspire the next generation all the time. And this generation was inspired by Arnold did this, Jack did this, Tom Watson did this, watch Tiger, and all that stuff. So it's something I think that as I get older, I have more appreciation for how lucky I've been to be around this sport since 97 and to see one of the great eras, one of the greatest champions in the history of any sport in Tiger, and still be around to get to meet and know Nicholas Palmer, Watson, to almost call Watson's incredible open, that if that you would have made that putt on the 18th hole, would have been, the oldest major champion of all time, would have been one of the greatest events in the history of the sport, of any sport, if Watson would have won that open. Just to be around that, I just think we all have an appreciation for golf that even in its screwed up moments right now, the game still fights through and has its rich qualities.
Last one for me, Mike, I'm curious, one of the bigger topics this year is Scottie Scheffler's run and now how he compares to the LIV players who have not been competing against him. We saw John Rahm and Koepka duel it out last year. What are you sort of expecting, from Scheffler now putting that game at this elite level against these guys who we haven't seen enough of?
Yeah, I expect Scheffler to play well.
Yeah.
I expect Rory to, you know, have moments where he's going to play well. Is his game together enough? Seeing Butch Harmon in between here from Players to Masters, is it the fix that he needed, or is he working on something? Who knows? I expect those guys to be around it, right? I expect Wyndham Clark to play well. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things you expect, because you've seen them play against the best players who are on the PGA Tour and play well. What I don't know is, I don't know where the sharpness is for DJ or Koepka. Phil, we saw last year, just, yeah, you know, really be in there and have an incredible Sunday, right? And John Rahm. Look, these guys are still world-class players and top world-class players. We just don't see it. So how do you handicap it? It's almost impossible, and it's frustrating. I don't think their absence takes away from what Scottie Scheffler has been doing, because I just think he's the guy with the target, and he's playing great golf. Mm-hmm. And under pressure, he's beating good players with good, really good golf. So I don't think it diminishes what he's doing, but you certainly want to see the best play against the best. You don't want to go, well, there were 3 years where these guys weren't around, and there were 5 years, because this might be the 3 or 5 years where Scottie Scheffler is his best.
Correct.
And you don't want to have to say, well, those guys weren't here. They were here for some of it. Don't get us wrong. This thing needs to get resolved and figured out. I think it's interesting to see the Saudi money come into sports like tennis.
Tennis, yeah.
And it's way above. Boy, tennis, it's like, here's what we do. There's PIF markings on the background of some of the men's tournaments. The women's season-ending title, despite the protestations of Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett, and others, the women's finals is going to be in Saudi Arabia, right? Mm-hmm. This continues to happen in other sports. Golf has taken the biggest hit from it, and the competition has been hurt because of it. And that's the part that I think Rory's usually right. He's the best interview going, and I think he's dead on. It's not good for the game. It's not sustainable. Now, for the guys of the Live Tour to say, yeah, we need to get this done quick. Sure, you got your money. You're the reasons that this is a problem, right? So I get it, guys. So, yeah, it's easy to say, as you know, you're counting your money. Right. Yeah, this needs to get solved right away. I don't know what the solution is. Maybe the solution is the guys who come back don't get equity in whatever the PGA Tour is building in this new enterprises thing. I don't know what that answer is, but we've got to get the best players at the biggest events. That's why I think the majors have a little more oomph to them. Yep. And I think, you know, as we come out of a great run for basketball, college basketball this year, before the NBA playoffs get started, man, golf could use a great Masters. It really could.
Yeah, very excited. Last one for me. You've done everything. You're doing Notre Dame football games now. You've done Monday Night Football. I believe you've done some Olympics. You're doing the Masters next week. Is there a...
He is the Olympics.
Mr. Olympics.
I didn't want to be wrong. Like, I've been there before.
Hey, I've been there as an announcer. Believe, reportedly, we think we understand here.
Yeah, he's covered himself.
All off ramps that make you somewhat accurate.
That's correct.
Yeah, there you go.
Somewhat. There you go. Go ahead.
Anyway, is there one? Is there an event, a white whale event, you haven't done, or is your plate full enough?
Oh, you know, I mean, I've been able to do a lot. Like you said, when I came to NBC, I had 25 amazing years at ESPN. This is now wrapping up my 8th year at NBC, and I've loved every second of it as much as you can. And there were events like the Olympics and the Kentucky Derby and the Indy 500 that I had not been able to do, that I was able to get to be a part of. So I'd say the only thing I haven't done is call the Super Bowl. I've hosted the Super Bowl pregame as a co-host a few times, the main host last time around in L.A. I hope that I get the opportunity to call Super Bowl here in the next few years. If I do, that would be incredible. If I don't, this has been a wonderful experience. The opportunity to host the Olympics is something very few people have gotten to do in the U.S. on TV. And really, this will be the 4th that I'm the primetime host for. And only 2 people who I idolize, Jim McKay and Bob Costas, are in that number of doing. And they did more. McKay did 7 or 8. Bob did 11. So I'll never get there. But just to do it this often, there's something really special about that. So I've been really lucky. A guy who thought it'd be a radio career in my life and has turned into this wonderful television experience for over 33 years now. I'm super blessed and super lucky. And I still love my job. That's the coolest part of it. Like getting off the plane this morning in Augusta, like, all right, we're back. Yeah. We're back, back for the 21st and 22nd Masters I've been to. And it doesn't get old. Does not get old. Right.
Well, you mentioned last thing for me, you know, 25 years, all these 25 years at ESPN. I want to know, do you have 25 years in you at NBC? That would, I think, take us to 2041. What do you see yourself running that the table 17. That long?
Can we come back in 8 years?
Yeah, there we go. Come back.
Yeah, I think you got to be halfway there before you can think about getting all the way there, right? We'd still be early second quarter. Look, for me, it is, I think when you've done this long, this is not a business that you last very long, right? And to be around the business this long is something that I just feel truly lucky. And I hope that the audience knows that when I'm on, I'm a fan. I know my job there is to be the connection from the event to you. You've got a job. You got things to do. We have access. Hopefully we use that access the best way to keep you informed and entertained while you're watching. And as long as I keep waking up wanting to do that, then I'll stay as long as they'll have me, I think. Or until I make that hole in one, whichever comes first.
And among your honors, by the way, and accolades and accomplishments, I believe you were the first host to appear on ESPN News, which was like...
That is correct.
Wow. That was right when I was in high school, I think, maybe when I was a freshman. And like I watched ESPN News 24/7.
That was the best, yeah.
It was the best because there was none of the extra stuff. It was just highlights. And so, I mean, you're a legend.
Thanks. Thanks for that. What'd you say? You're in high school?
When that came out.
Thanks. Yeah. I appreciate that. That's good. At least you weren't in diapers. At least you're not one of the guys.
These guys might have been.
The guys who come up and say, hey, great to meet you. I grew up watching you. Thank you so much. Right. When the dads start to say that, they've got their little kids hey, son, I used to watch them when I was growing up. Like, okay, get out of here. Come on, man. Well, those were fun days and fun times. And Bill Raftery was on the first half hour of ESPN News with me.
What a combo.
One of that's our incredible Eaton Hall fans over here.
Unbelievable. That's cool. Well, anyway, you talked about the golfers inspiring the next generation. You've undoubtedly inspired the next generation of media. So congrats, Mike, for everything. And thank you so much for joining us. Have a great week at Augusta. Hopefully we'll see you there. If not, I know it's a huge year for you at the Olympics, so have a great year with everything else. And again, hopefully we'll all cross paths down the line. Hopefully we'll get our first hole in one this year, all of us.
All of us.
All at the same time. Let's do that.
That's right.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Keep up the good work. Keep talking golf and keep us entertained. We appreciate you. Thanks so much.
All right. That was obviously a real treat getting to talk to Mike there. He mentioned Vandeveld. It's funny. I did a story on that years ago. It must have been 20 years after. Yeah, maybe 2019. And I went and talked to Mike at whatever British Open it was. And he was so great talking about it. So I kind of knew he was going there with the craziest, you know, event that he's ever covered or whatever. But great chatting with Mike. Guys, before we get into with Keith Stewart, you guys are already down in Augusta. And you already have a round of golf under your belts. I'm very jealous. I'm sitting here busting my butt, finishing some stuff. I can't wait to join you guys. Tell us, where'd you guys play today? Are you allowed to tell us? Is it a secret?
No, not a secret. Played Old Barnwell, which is one of the new courses down the
hot new courses.
Yeah. So it's close to the tree farm. I think it's like a half hour away, but in Aiken. Aiken, South Carolina, just a hub of great golf. And what a fun course. The greens were insane. This is Brian Schneider and Blake Connett. And the club has a great mission. We had a caddy from the Evans Scholars. They do a lot with the HBCUs and the Annika stuff. A great place to get a peek into. And played with our buddy Danny Rapp and also my buddy Matt, who is making his first trip to the Masters this year. So D-Rap and I took some money off CP and Bish. I had three birdies, almost had four.
Yeah, I would love, believe me, I would love to say Steve got carried, but it was kind of the opposite.
Steve, you almost had four birds?
I don't think I've ever had three birdies in a round. And
yeah, that's heating up.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait, what were the teams?
D-Rabbit versus.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'm the high handicap Danny.
I assume you guys steamrolled then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Steamroll City. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't too competitive. The back nine got a little interesting, but.
The patty chips paying off still, or?
Today I didn't have it. Had it over the weekend and.
Okay.
You had some moments.
Yeah, not enough of them though.
Well, all right. Any other golf lined up this week? Okay.
I'm playing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
You guys, hang on. So you guys both brought your clubs?
Yes.
All right. So
well,
When I win the Masters lottery, I'll be one of your clubs.
There you go. You're cleared now, right?
I'm thinking I'm positive. I'm cleared. Well, three quarter wedges this weekend. So I'm hoping by like next weekend and Monday. He said 2 weeks, but obviously if I win the Masters lottery, I'm not turning that
grit it out.
So I'll grit it out. I'll grit it out like Akshay. Maybe I'll find his PT, his trainer, and get him on the line, have him work on my knee while I'm down there.
We recommend it. We recommend it if you get the chance.
Yeah, if I get the chance.
Highly recommend.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll see. Fingers crossed. I'm feeling so good, though, now after that Akshay win. It's like, man, the vibes are so different.
I know. Can't
believe it. All right. But we are going to try to hit the next winner this week with our pal Keith Stewart, who joins us now. Please have a listen to our chat with Keith Stewart. We break down this year's Masters picks.
Hello, I'm Luke Cardenine, the host of the Golf IQ podcast, and we've got some very exciting news here in Golf Digest land. It's a new newsletter available exclusively to Golf Digest Plus members, and it'll land in your inbox once a week. It's the greatest newsletter in all the land here at Golf Digest, but I admit there is an upstart rival in the ranks, and it goes by the name of the Low Net newsletter with Sam Wyman, who's here right now. Sam, what's the lowdown on your newsletter?
Well, my newsletter, Luke, is the reason that you are competing for second place at best. My newsletter, as you said, is called Low Net. It's geared towards golfers like myself who are very much in the middle of the pack at your course or your club. It's a game I live and breathe, and I'm obsessed with getting better.
No, in all seriousness, it's a great read. It's full of not just really interesting and helpful stuff, but really relatable stuff from the man who probably loves golf the most of anybody here at Golf Digest. So head over to golfdigest.com/plus. Sign up and start enjoying both of these awesome newsletters each and every week.
All right, we now welcome Keith Stewart, CEO of Read the Line, to the Loop podcast, breaking down the Masters betting board. Keith, obviously, with Read the Line, Golf Digest partner, golf betting contributor at Golf Digest. And Keith just got done penning over 5,000 words on a power ranking of all the players in the field. And yet he's still joining us. He hasn't quit yet. So Keith, happy Masters Monday, my friend.
You know, I tell you, it's the most anticipated odds day of the year. I mean, it's been 260 days since Brian Harman lifted the claret jug. So I'm happy to be here with you boys going over this. It's exciting.
Absolutely. You know, I think regardless of what level of golf better you are, you're probably in a Masters pool or two or three or four like me. You're, you know, making bets in Newark Airport like CP and I were before getting on our flight to Augusta yesterday. But before we get into our favorite bets, I want to talk a little about your power rankings, because you had a different number one than probably every other website's power rankings did. And we appreciate that, because that's great for content that's going to get people going. So we didn't ask you to do it, but we appreciate it. So go into your decision to rank someone at number one whose name is not Scottie Scheffler.
Well, to my knowledge, the assignment was for Augusta to give you the power rankings, who has the best chance to win, right? Yeah. So that to me was like, all right, who's going to win? Well, in my mind, the number one person on my list, based upon my research. And then, I mean, I think when it comes to something or a place that's as predictive as Augusta National Golf Club, you have to go a little bit with your gut as well. I mean, I don't think the numbers explain everything. And to me, I think that all the circumstances that surround Magnolia Lane, John Rahm was the number one guy to perform the best at Augusta National. And if you asked me who the number one player in the world is, I would have said, yeah, Scottie Scheffler. That would have been it wouldn't have been 5,300 words and whatever number of pages it was. But like at the end of the day, like he's the strokes gain leader of this generation, John Rahm, right? He's the scoring average leader at Augusta National. He's got five top tens and seven visits. He owns the green jacket. And everyone's going to say, well, Keith, you know, nobody repeats there or whatever. Well, that's not true. Jack did it, right? Faldo did it. And you know, Faldo was great, but he wasn't like a generational player like Jack or Tiger. I mean, I think Rahm can get it done. And the one thing that kind of like, and I've talked with this about with a couple people, since 1980, the number one country of winners at Augusta National is obviously America, right? There's 22 of them. But guess what? There's six wins by Spain with four different guys.
Wow.
And Spain's not a big place for golf. Like they're, you know, so like at the end of the day, I don't know if there's like something, you know, in the running of the bulls when they're kids or whatever, they train them for like Augusta National, or it's because Seve had so much success there. But like, I mean, it's kind of crazy to me that he plays so well there and all the other comp courses, right? Your Rivieras, your Kapaluas, all those places. So to me, when you added it all up, you asked me for the best performers in the 88th Masters. And in my mind, that was John Rahm.
CP, do you, you know, in pools and stuff like that, you know, none of us are betting Scottie Scheffler 4-1. So not asking if you're betting Scottie, but would you go Rahm over Scheffler in some of these scenarios? Are you on Keith's side, or are you sticking with Scottie as, you know, the guy who has the best chance to win?
No, Keith makes a good point. I don't entirely disagree. I do think it has kind of gone a little too far with Scottie. I mean, 4-1, and what's Rahm at 10-1, 12-1, or something like that? That's kind of crazy. I understand they're building in that Rahm might not be as sharp, but I don't know. We're talking about John Rahm here. I think he'll be able to flip the switch pretty easily. And like Keith said, he knows this place so well. You can kind of rely on the experience here, as many guys have in the past. So I'm not too worried about the, I guess, lack of reps or sharp reps, as, you know, whatever you think about LIV, 54 holes, small fields. I think it's fair to say guys are not going to be as sharp. Obviously they disproved that theory last year. But yeah, I don't disagree with Keith's ranking at all, actually.
CP brings up a point that I think is crucial to betting this year, Keith, and that's kind of analyzing these LIV guys and where to go for information on it and just like how much to look into it. So, you know, you made the point in your odds post about Koepka. You know, his odds are now 16-1. CP mentioned this too, I believe. And, you know, last week at Doral, he didn't have a great week. And last year before the Masters, you know, 54 hole leader, he won in Orlando. So he was coming in playing probably better golf. So how are you assessing these LIV players overall? Because aside from Rahm, aside from Koepka, I mean, there's some contenders. If, you know, if we got to see them more, we would be betting them automatically. Dustin Johnson at 36-1, Tyrrell Hatton, you know, doesn't love Augusta, but, you know, 85-1 or whatever. Cam Smith, Patrick Reed. How do we begin to think about these guys in terms of betting and pools this week?
I think that LIV Miami was the most relevant that LIV has been since, you know, the original one in London 2 years ago.
Right.
You know, I think that everyone was paying attention. I get it that their statistics are at the archaic state of like the LPGA, and it's like, hey, greens in regulation, and hey, driving distance, right? Like, and we're dealing with much better analytics in the PGA Tour. But at the end of the day, when Brooks goes 10 over for the weekend or whatever he shot down there, you know, I mean, is it too much South Beach and not enough strokes gained? I mean, I don't know that. I'm just guessing. But like, you have to look at that and you have to say, okay, well, at the top of the board, obviously Rahm was putting the time in and Tyrrell Hatton was putting the time in, and these guys are working and they're grinding. And obviously, you know, Brooks was way down the field. That would give me pause. Right. Now, that's not to say that if Brooks was playing on, like, I don't know, the senior Scandinavian tour somewhere, that he wouldn't show up for majors, because he sure as heck qualifies for them. He's got five of them to his credit. But like turning it off and on gets harder and harder when, you know, these elite guys, and these guys are well aware of what we talk about. There's four events this year. That's it. You know, I mean, we'll talk about a lot of events, but there's four of them. And these guys know what's coming. And I just get the feeling like there's Rob does not want to go into that mahogany press room and start answering questions about how good Scotty is.
Yeah, true.
Period. He does not. And with a guy like Rob, he putting a chip on his shoulder, that's motivation. It's not anxiety. It's not pressure. That is like the purest form of inspiration. That's like Tom Brady style. Like, I'm going to run through a wall and get you. Michael Jordan, like, give me locker room fodder, right? Like, he's ready to roll. And, you know, he's the perfect personality for that.
CP, do you have a favorite LIV player that you're betting this week? I know you're always Team Brooks. Have you made that bet already? Is there anyone else who interests you?
Well, Keith said it is a gut feeling week, and I'll just let the listeners know all my bets are based on vibes alone this week. So not a ton of statistical research. This is the vibes week of all vibes week. I don't disagree with what Keith said about Brooks. Definitely harder to turn it on and off when you get older too. He's got a baby now. I don't know. You could argue perspective. I don't know. But I think similarly to what you just said about Rahm, if Brooks gets a couple Scotty questions, that could really piss him off too. But yeah, that is a bad weekend to be coming in on. You don't, you know, I know he can flip the switch. I would prefer he didn't shoot what he shot over the weekend last week. I know Doral's super hard. But yeah, I'm still going to bet Brooks Koepka. That was all a long way of saying, yes, I am still going to bet him 20-1. I think, you know, at this point, you just look stupid if he's 4-under through 6 on Thursday and you're going, why the hell didn't I bet this guy? He does this every single time. So yeah, I will be on Brooks this week.
I remember.
Hey, Steve, one quick thing. Yeah. When we talk about a Rahm or a Rory or whomever or Scotty and say they're not going to win, that doesn't mean they're going to miss the cut.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. For, you know, people that it might just be, they might just be listening because it's Masters week and they're like, oh, you know, Chris or Keith is like slamming, you know, Brooks, Brooks will be a part of the conversation.
Yep.
But at some point, you got to pick somebody.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. We're talking about outright bets. So it doesn't matter if they finish second or miss the cut by a million. You know, you're going to lose your bet regardless. Obviously, there's so many different markets to hit this week with, you know, top 10s and 20s and 40s, first round leaders, matchups. We'll get into some of that. Keith, I mean, one of the guys you talked about betting on Monday morning was someone who I had FOMO last year. I remember sitting in the media center. Xander Schauffele gets off to this hot start, and CP and Myers, I'm pretty sure, bet. I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. I didn't bet Xander. He then went on to do Xander things and had another top finish, didn't win. But you're on him. 22-1, is that the number that you got, Xander?
Yes, and that happened, you know, over a week ago because, you know, as it is now, I mean, his number is going to continue to plummet. I mean, it's going to be he's sinking below Brooks, which in a lot of ways raises Brooks's value, and I get that. But here's what I'm most interested in coming into this and why some of those rankings sit where they are. I mean, look at some of those names and where they are. Cantlay, Morikawa, Hovland. All right. Like with the odds brokers know what they're doing, right? They know who actually people have interest in and B, how they're playing. So they're going with as much gut as they are analytics. But like, when you look at somebody like Patrick Cantlay, who came in last year at plus 2000 and now his odds are plus 3,500, like that's not good. Right. So what my point is that with some of these major, like we went into the Augusta last year and I think we had what, 6 or 7 guys under 20-1. Mm-hmm. Right. So there was no like super clear favorite. Now this year, all of a sudden there's like, everyone's just talking about those big three and maybe Xander. Right. Well, I think that the reason for that is because Cantlay, Spieth, JT, Hovland, Morikawa, all of those guys, they haven't played well this year. So if there was ever a time for a Xander to slide in, and as consistent as he's been and where he sits in the sweet spot of master starts, I kind of love it.
Could not agree more, Keith. I think if you take away Scotty and Hideki, you scroll these first 20 names, there's really only one guy who's playing well right now and has good success here at Augusta National. And that is
Xander Schauffele, so I will be on him as well. I think I'm going to keep it Brooks and Xander card, and maybe room for one more guy we can get to in a second here.
Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned Hideki, right? So, like, the reason I go Xander over Hideki is because Hideki does Hideki things when you never see him coming.
Yep.
Right? He won at Genesis. He hadn't had a top 10 since Players the year before. The year he won the Masters, he wasn't even a, you know, he wasn't even a part of the conversation, yep. Right? And then, you know, when he seems to be really, really good, then he'll top 10 or something yep. like that. But, like, that's why I lean that way in that argument space.
Yeah. You made the point about Hideki too, Keith. You've been talking about him for weeks. The ball striking stats are incredible at the Players. I mean, they were right behind Scottie Scheffler, and he just continues to play great golf. Did at the Valero last week. So, you know, I've bet him 25-1. He's going to continue. His odds are going to get lower, probably in the 20 range before, you know, Thursday starts. So, you know, if people are listening to this Monday night, better to go bet it if you have interest. Because, you know, everyone's seeing the same stats. Everyone knows he's won here before. You know, Bubba has two Masters victories, Crenshaw and Longer. I mean, it's a trend. So, I'm with you on Hideki. I think we've assessed the top of the board well. CP, anyone you mentioned you might have interest in one guy toward the bottom who you got?
Yeah, 50-1. Mentioned him in our odds drop video this morning. Cameron Young, I think that's kind of crazy. Last seven majors, I believe he's played in. He has four top tens. One of them came here at Augusta last year, T7. Coming off the runner up at Valspar, I think that's just kind of a ridiculous number for a guy who shows up to the majors and kind of top tens in his sleep.
Especially yeah. for a major where you don't have to be a great putter.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. But along those lines, if you love a little bit of value, I mean, and what you said about him, you know, four top tens in his last seven majors. I mean, how about Willie Z? Yep. He's played in 10 majors. He's got six top tens, you know, and he's a second and a sixth there. And he's proven he can get around Augusta National. He's proven he's back from his back injury. He wasn't great at the Players. And, you know, Houston, the putter seemed a little bit off. But, like, at the end of the day, the number one factor for Augusta National and success is history. And that's why people talk about a gut feeling, but the fact of the matter is that's it.
Yep.
You know, and there's one other name there that I want to point out that I'm definitely going to put on my card, and that's Shane Lowry.
Yeah.
Some boards have him at 50, some have him 55, but Shane Lowry, when he finished third in 2022, right? When he was coming in, he goes second at Cognizant, 13th at Players, 12th at Valspar. So what does he do this year coming in, right? He goes fourth at Cognizant, third at API, 19th at Players. He goes three straight top 20s, looks great, and that's the type of place. I mean, Irishmen look good in green, man.
We could all agree with some Irish blood in all three of us. Those guys, everyone who you just mentioned, Willie Z, Cam Young, and Lowry is in that conversation. I think they're all great top 10, top 20 bets. And I couple Xander in with this. I just don't know if I could trust them to hit the clutch putt when I need them to. That's what I can't get behind an outright at Augusta for. I just feel like if it's Rahm or Brooks or Scheffler against one of those guys, and it's like a 10-footer for par with one of them, they ain't going to make it. I've seen that enough.
Too many times.
Yeah, but top 10, top 20, I'm all on board with that. And pools, I mean, those guys, you know, could line your betting pools. Keith, a little further down the board and, you know, DFS purposes too, like in the 8,000, 7,000 range, are there any names who stick out? And, you know, whether that's outright bets, placement bets, matchups, DFS, who you like in that middle range?
I think at the end of the day, I mean, some of the people that become very chalky down there, I mean, everyone's going to argue the leverage point, I'm sure, when it comes down to it, when we start to talk about DFS. But when you get further down the board, it's, you know, and some of these names have dropped so far. But, you know, when you see somebody like a Max Homa on some boards is getting up in the 60s and the 70s, and it's, you know, I know it has been great in majors, but Corey Connors has had great success there. I mean, I love a Patrick Reed at Augusta. his record here is unbelievable. It is year after year after year. And Adam Scott's been playing some of the best golf of his, you know, career ball striking wise earlier this, you know, start of the season, February and early March. So those are a couple names right there. And I wouldn't be surprised. Not that he's going to win. I mean, I know we have 20 rookies there or whatever, but Akshay Bhatia, he fits the mold there, you know, shaky putter, unbelievable ball striker. So, you know, you might look through the ranks and might say, oh, like, look at the scoring average of Ricky Fowler over all these years or whatever. Like, look at Ricky Fowler right now, right? Yeah. Like some of those other names I mentioned, those are the guys as I dig deeper and deeper into research. And I want to also understand, like, a big factor that we haven't brought up yet, and we're talking about this in a vacuum, is that there's going to be a storm coming in Wednesday into Thursday.
Yep.
Right. And when the tee times come out on Tuesday, that could affect a lot of the numbers when it comes to betting. So all of a sudden, like, you might get Brooks in the wrong spot and Hideki and Xander in the right spot. And those numbers are going to, you know, like right now we're going with what we know, the best information we have at the present time. And if all of a sudden it pours early AM Thursday into Thursday morning, that PM AM wave, they might play like six holes or something on Thursday afternoon. And they might play all day Friday on soft conditions in the morning with no wind. You know, and those guys will go nuts. And we saw what happened last year. You were in the wrong wave. Oh, what? Rob was like the only guy that survived in the bad wave. And then he ended up winning the thing. That's how good he was hitting it, right? So I think there's still a lot of question marks before we get too deep into parts of the board. You know, a guy like Corey Connors shows up on the right side of the wave and, you know, he's hitting it pretty good. We're going, okay, you know, like I like this call right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a great point for your placement bets is to wait on the wave. You could probably go hunting for some good top 20 numbers once that comes out.
Yeah.
I got a quick question for you guys, right? Yeah. Nobody wants to bet Scheffler at 4 or 5 to 1 or wherever he ends up going in on Thursday morning, right? Everyone's going to say they're going to wait for him live, but that number will never go higher because he's not going to play bad.
Right.
and even if somebody goes out Thursday morning and the weather doesn't happen and they go like 8 under or set the course record, he's still going to be sitting there at less than, you know, where he started because there's less holes left and he's so good. Do you guys, have you heard anything or what do you guys plan to do? I've heard a lot of creative things lately, but I want to pick your brains, your betting minds about, like, do you plan to do anything creative to parlay Scheffler with something? You know, just a thought.
No, not here. I mean, you know, I've heard, parlay them with Iowa women and UConn and Purdue. Like,
well, no, I'm saying more like a top 10 Will Zalatoris plus a Scotty, right? Let's just keep it to the Masters, right? Like, let's just stick to that. You know, a couple weeks ago in Houston, I had took Scotty and I parlayed it with Nelly. And then who let me down? Scotty, right? Of all things, right? But like that got me up over 20, right? Putting the two of them together to win their respective tournaments, right? Like if you get the right top 10 person, and you put them with Scotty, you could probably get that thing into the high teens or even into, you know, 20. So, like, I don't know if you guys had heard anything or, you know, had some good hunches. I was just, I think it's a valuable conversation right now.
Speaking of plus EV bets, what is not a plus EV bet is first round leaders. CP, you and I were at Newark Airport firing some first round leader bets before we got on our flight down here to Augusta. A few that I made were Corey Connors at about 80-90 to 1. I think in a 1 or 2 round vacuum, Corey Connors obviously has great history here, is playing well. Love Corey Connors as a first round leader, as well as Russell Henley, who I mentioned in the value bets video on golfdigest.com. So I'm betting him outright at 70 to 1. I think first round leader is a great way to play him. T4 here last year, bunch of great finishes. Did you bet a couple other first round leaders? CP, I'm forgetting.
I did not, but always interested in the FRL market, of course. I do think, like Keith said, maybe this is a good one to wait on the wave, the tee times tomorrow. A couple guys I would consider. I'm going to bet Brian Harman in some capacity this week. Game Hunter does have a T12 here a couple of years ago, has since missed 2 straight cuts, unfortunately, but talk about the lefty advantage here. Obviously Harman has that, has a decent bit of length. And also read a great quote from the Masters Journal that Steve brought to Augusta from John Rahm, who said he got some advice from Jose Maria Olazabal a few years ago that kind of changed his thinking here at Augusta, and that was you have to play it like a links course, and the low shot is kind of always the better shot here. Brian Harman just won the Open Championship at a links course, so I'm feeling the Brian Harman vibes this week. Obviously, he just played well at the Players too. And you know, he's getting up there in age. He's only got a few more cracks at these, and I think he would love nothing more than to get another one, especially this one in Georgia.
Keith, you reacted to Brian Harman negatively.
Was that a good or bad?
We know the lefties play so well here, but Harman is a little shorter off the tee than some of the others. What do you think about Big Harmy?
I just think the length is such an issue there over the course of 72 holes. Now, if we're talking about first round leader and he's going to get off to a hot start, maybe. But look at the venue where he won his major championship. You know, like it just was so perfectly suited to him. And this, I mean, Zach Johnson's that type of player is not walking through and winning the Masters anytime soon, right? Like, I mean, it's well documented how long and how high you have to hit the golf ball off the tee in order to take full advantage. And especially if this place gets soft. Right. If it starts raining heavy and Wednesday into Thursday, it won't. Yeah, they have sub air and everything and they'll get it to dry out by Saturday. But like still like that's a huge hurdle to overcome for somebody like Harman. Whereas like I'm not a big first round leader guy because, you know, there's always ties. It's so wave dependent. It can be such a fickle marketplace. And I'm just not a big believer in like having nine guys on my card and then like giving them like a tenth of a unit, you know, like either pick somebody or don't, you know, like I can't stand that, seeing that on Twitter all the time. So like the one name that kind of that has always been great at deep odds is Justin Rose. Now his form hasn't been great, but if you look at his first round leader stats, the guy's unbelievable there at Augusta, much like Charlie Hoffman was back in the day. But then the other name is that who's been good lately in majors. And we talked about him a lot earlier is Xander Schauffele. So I would not be surprised if he catches good weather on Thursday to see Xander go out quickly. And all the reasons you don't want to bet him outright, meaning he doesn't close, the guy opens. How about last year at LACC? Was that any good?
Yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this is a great week for end of first round top 10, top 20, depending on the book. They always bring that out for the big events. So Xander is actually a very good a bet for those type of bets this week.
Bets.
I would say Victor, usually Victor is, but you just can't get a read on Victor this week. I actually bet him top 10 after round one at the Players, and he didn't have it that week. Hasn't had it kind of since Olympia Fields, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much guys like Colin and Victor and Cantley and some of them have fallen off. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, if you look at the strokes gain total for their years, it's pretty eye-opening.
And yet this is one of those places where some clicks and, you know, the magic kind of happens. So I do fear a Morikawa or a Hovland kind of coming out of nowhere. They would actually have a legitimate case to I came out of nowhere. You hear that so much on Golf Channel this week. He's coming in under the radar. Literally the whole top of the board's coming in under the radar. Right. But I think you could make that case for a Colin, for a Victor, and for a Patrick Cantlay, who Keith mentioned as well.
All right, we've been 25 minutes into this, and we have no mention of Tiger Woods yet.
Or Spieth.
Or Rory.
Right?
Or Rory. Well, not a Rory mention.
Oh, my goodness, right? Like, I got to ask you guys, what's the ceiling, what's the basement on Tiger this week?
Well, do we have make the cut odds on Tiger yet? Because that's my favorite way to play it. Yeah. Plus 120 over at DraftKings.
To make the cut. Wow.
I'm not used to seeing a plus in front of his name.
No.
I don't expect that to last.
Augusta?
Yeah, I don't expect that to last. And we bet that last year. It was a bit of a sweat. But I mean, he has made the cut in a lot of these majors he's played in. He
and Phil are the only two at plus money. How about a Phil Tiger parlay to make the weekend?
With Scotty. There you go, Keith.
With Scotty to win. There you go.
I mean, like that. Give me some numbers on that.
Yeah.
Keith, punch that in.
He's still in New Jersey, so we might have to talk to a friend here, CP, and get that in for us.
Let's see.
Newark Airport in a couple hours. I'll be joining you boys tomorrow.
That's right. You will be on site. Well, DraftKings doesn't let you parlay that.
Is a shame.
Yeah.
Well, when you go back to the power rankings, which is where we started this conversation, you know, I had Tiger's 37th.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. You guys have a reaction to that?
And yeah. You ranked the whole, it was the whole field, right?
Oh, I took the top 50.
Okay. 37th. That's high praise for the GOAT.
You know, of which there's probably at least a dozen guys that are irrelevant to the field, which is why I stopped at 50. You know, I just figured that we're talking about who's going to perform well.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, you had Russell Henley at 39th. You had Siwoo at 38th. I feel like, you know, if you could get a matchup with those guys against Tiger, we would all bet that, I think, on the other side of Tiger. But aside from that, you know, the other guys above him, you know, Tyrrell Hatton maybe was a little low on your ranks. But, I mean, Ryan Fox, JT Poston, like, you know, Tiger could make the cut. Those guys could be, you know, trunk slamming on Saturday. So I didn't think that was too egregious. I feel like 40th or so, maybe 41st seems right.
I think Phil was 40.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For reference.
Felt like the right spot too. Man, I can't believe these plus odds. I hope by the time people are listening to this, that's still available to bet. And on that, we'll wrap it up. Any final thoughts betting pool wise? CP, I'll start with you. Any bets you like that we haven't mentioned, or names we haven't mentioned who you want to?
Should we divulge your big bet from last night?
Oh, how did we not get into that?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. And Keith, you will appreciate this. So,
yep.
All right.
Our friend, Tom E, we'll call him to protect the innocent. He sent me a very big bet that he made on Gary Woodland. He was 500-1, now has been slashed to 250-1 about the time that Tom E made that bet, which is no surprise because it was a very big bet with a big potential payout at least. And he made the point that Gary was T13 here last year, obviously dealing with such a huge health issue, and still was able to finish T13. And the approach numbers, if you look at the last couple weeks, are sort of back to what we'd expect from Gary. So if he's healthy, you know, his length, if it's wet, I mean, outright is, you know, that's why he was 500 and he's still 250. But what's your reaction to that, Keith and Gary Woodland?
I think 250 is still 250 for a reason. But Tom E is a very well respected friend of ours. So I admire. See, here's the thing in betting: people get caught up in these romantic stories. You know, like at the end of the day, over the last, what, like 10 years, the average winning odds at Augusta is like plus 2,600.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to be one of these guys we spent all this time talking about. And it could even be Rory, since we didn't mention his name at all. Right. You know, right. I don't know about Jordan, but like, I mean, I can't bet Jordan. I'm getting too old. It's just, I need like an AED sitting around, you know, like it's unbelievable. But like, I mean, it's going to come from one of these names and they're all going to be right up there. And I just think, When people are putting all this together, it's easy to get romantic about, you know, their feelings about their memories of Augusta and all of that. But at the end of the day, the best players showing great recent form match all of the trends, and they're sitting in their late 20s and early 30s.
Yeah,
and that's where you need to focus your attention.
Yeah, I think Gary, you know, making that bet, if he's just a couple shots within the lead going into Sunday, heck, if he's alive on Saturday as a bet, now all of a sudden you have some hedge equity and you can make some moves on Scheffler because, hey, I have this huge ticket in my pocket. So, I mean, I don't know that Gary Woodland is going to win the Masters.
What do we say? Bad putters can win at Augusta National.
Sure.
There might not Sergio be a worse one in this field.
Oh, Adam Scott?
Hideki. Adam Scott, yep.
There's a list. Yeah. You know, like, it's
Willie
long.
Z. We've talked Willie about Z's. Some of them.
Yep.
Keith, Scotty,
any final Scotty. Thoughts before you head to the airport, Keith, any final thoughts?
I just think that it's really important that with all that's been going on in golf, that we all just appreciate this week.
Oh yeah.
You know, I know your good friend made a nice post yesterday talking about going to Augusta and really appreciate what's going on this week. And that mentality or that mindset really kind of touched me, into the point where like it's been a long time since the Claret Jug was raced, right? 260 days. And, these events have just become so cool. And the Masters is the coolest of all of them. So enjoy the next 6 days, and best of luck to everybody.
Very excited.
Sounds great. We will see you down in Augusta soon. Keith, safe travels. Thanks to everyone for listening to our betting segment of The Loop. And good luck on all your bets, pools, et cetera, this week.
All right. Thanks again to Keith for joining us. We asked Mike, what does he look forward to the most? What do you guys look forward to the most when you get down to Augusta National this week? Because I know, CP, this is your second.
I don't know if I'm qualified to answer that.
Yeah, you are. You've gone once and you played. And then obviously, Steve, what is this? You're like third or fourth? Fourth, fifth?
Number four, yeah.
Four, yeah. So, what do you guys think? What are you guys looking forward to?
I mean, seeing Tiger is always a highlight. And, the fact he was at the course yesterday, encouraging that he's going to play. So that's an obvious answer. I just love seeing the grounds and kind of getting to walk around early in the week. It gets crazier on the tournament days. And it looks like the rain is kind of going to be nuts on Thursday. I feel bad.
Yeah. Oh, is it going to be that bad?
Yeah.
And that's when your buddy has tickets?
He is also going Tuesday and Wednesday though. But he bought a pass for Thursday lot of money. And
Tuesday, Wednesday looks really good at least.
Yeah. Those are going to be great days. So
how much money can you divulge? We don't want to get this guy in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
or was it illegal? Was it a legal purchase? I don't even know anymore.
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay.
It was four figures for sure.
Oh boy. Okay. For one day. Oof. Mm. When he's going on Tuesday, Wednesday already. Wow. Good for him. I mean, I guess you want to say you actually saw
going to be down here. So he wanted to do it. So
my buddy just called me. I had to decline his call, but I know he's calling because he's got Wednesday practice round. And another buddy I met up with last year on the course from high school, he got a practice round. So neither of them have gotten the tournament rounds. Those are even more elusive, obviously, than the practice ones, but well, good luck to him. That's great. He gets to go at least. CP, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
I mean, kind of cliche maybe, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing everybody together again playing what I believe will lead to, like, I think we're headed for something special on the weekend. So courses, obviously everyone's saying it's immaculate. I don't know if it ever hasn't been. I that's a hilarious take. But I think course is going to be great. I hope all the stars align and we get, similar to last year, but a little more bunched. Brooks and Rahm and Scotty and now Wyndham Clark gets mentioned. I hope all the LIV guys are at the top of the leaderboard again. I'm here for the chaos. Yeah, I'm a huge LIV guy. Yeah, here for the chaos.
I hope Cam Smith is healthy. I have him in my ranking, and I know he just dropped from 25 to 30 to 1. So you never know. But it's like Mike said, it's crazy. It's like, and he's been to thousands of events all over, but even for us with the golf tournaments, you go to these other tournaments and no disrespect to them, you're kind of like, it's fun, but it's a job. The Masters week is just that one week. It's like, gotta go. It's the best. It's hard to even describe. It really, truly is the best. And like you said, it's amazing. We don't get to see these guys going head to head much anymore. Unfortunately, this is the week, one of the 4 weeks, and this is the first of those 4 weeks. So the anticipation is huge. You had an incredible finish at the ANWA with Lottie Wode tracking down Bailey Shoemaker. I mean, birding three of the final four. Like you said, last year it was Brooks Rahm, but you didn't get like that crazy finish either. So maybe it all comes together this year. We can only hope. We can only keep our fingers crossed. And I'll be double fingers crossed about the media lottery. I can make my big comeback this week.
We need a proper winning putt. Sergio, was it Sergio was the last?
But Sergio had it, could have two putted for the win.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of like
an Adam Scott, I guess.
Yeah, Adam Scott.
Yeah, he had to make on 10, right?
he had to make, and then he made on
yeah, in regulation was all time.
Right. No, yeah, and he made it on 10. Yeah, to win. Yeah, to win, yep. For sure. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Was that the last, like, winning putt? Oh, we'll feel like idiots if we miss one. I mean, obviously, Tiger tapped in for bogey.
Reed had, like, 4 feet. That was a little testier than we all thought, yes. Probably.
Yes. But, yeah, we could use one of those.
Need, like, an O'Meara.
Yeah. Yep.
Type finish.
O'Meara. Yeah. There've certainly been some, but, yeah, it does seem like it's been a while. But, yeah, obviously looking forward to it. I'm sure everybody out there is looking forward to it as well. So with that, we will wrap up. Again, thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Mike Tirico for joining us. Thanks as always to our producer, Greg Gottfried. Thanks again to Keith Stewart as well. And, please subscribe, and wherever you listen to podcasts, leave us a message. Leave us a little words of encouragement that are for me, that I can win the lottery finally. I think I'm 0-7. We'll see. Anyway, please check back next week to see if the vibes are still as high. See ya. Good job. Okay. Good job, everyone.